But I'm thinking of a series of dreams where this punk, this rebel, turned into a pirate. Still outside society, right? He had on a red chain of beads. And he was, you know, taking himself around. Big energy, huge energy. This was worked with. 6 months later, he appeared as an artist with a red jerkin. You could see it was the same energy. Now, this energy eventually turned into Christ energy. Because, you see, Christ, the Christ energy is outside the collective. There was no room for him in the inn. So he lived outside society, outside the norm of the patriarchal law. And this is why this character is so important. So this is why I think you have to wait, because there's a tremendous tendency to revolt when you've got that kind of energy. But if you can hold the tension of the opposites, it will transform and something. Then you can honestly say to yourself, now what do I want to do here? And in that mature position, you can do what you want to do. Does that make sense? Now, in terms of the new ethos. Oh, you're a student. Thank you very much. I'm sure you've been hearing what I've been saying this morning about power moving to love. And the difficulties in that, but in terms of a global village, and it's clear that technology has brought us to the place where we now are a global village. We still have no idea how to handle it. We still don't know how to get along with our neighbors, let alone be a global village. But that's where we are working towards. And if you believe in the evolution of consciousness, and if you look back, you know, we've gone from the caves to bands, to tribes, to nations, to international, and now we're into global. So there is an evolution going on here, and we have no idea where it's going. Our leaders don't seem to be strong enough yet to take us anywhere at a real distance. I think some of them have vision, but we're all in the muddling place at this point. So it seems to me that one has to have immense faith right now that there is a divine plan in all of this somewhere. Or from a Jungian standpoint, there is an archetypal pattern working here somewhere. We can't see it yet, but someday in the future, it will evolve. Meantime, we are the people of the transition. And we have heavy work to do because we are going through the death pangs of the old. Some people cannot recognize that, and we just have to keep holding and trusting our own imagery to take us forward. So I've been, just to weave this a bit, stressing the importance of staying with the instinct and with the images in order to recognize our own authenticity. And with that authenticity, to be able to move from the power paradigm into the love. Also, coming to birth of consciousness of the feminine and consciousness of the masculine. Now, I don't care what words you give to these two energies. But in dreams, they do manifest biologically. So if you want to see the balance between your masculine and feminine, you can look at your dreams and look at the balance of masculine and feminine figures in your dreams. See how they're getting along. But surely, again, the ethos, as I see it, is moving toward an individual who will be able to balance those two energies. Jung, contrary to public opinion, was one of the first to recognize the connection between mind and spirit. And I'd just like to spend a few minutes talking about that in terms of the new ethos. Jung believed that the archetype is psychoid. Now, by that he meant that it manifests physically, biologically, in what he called the infrared side of a spectrum. The biological end of the spectrum comes through in your physical symptoms and in your body responses. Because what you do with your body is a mirror of what is going on in your psyche. And Jung said that if there was a conflict going on in you that you could not bring to consciousness because it was too painful, it would manifest in symptom. That's an important point to think of in terms of illness. If you are able to bring the symptom to conflict to consciousness, you're able to endure that conflict consciously, the symptom will disappear. Now, I think there are other factors. You see, I would say that stress on the body, pollutants cause huge stress. Obviously, they have an effect, but certainly the psyche has an effect as well. So, on the one side, then, we have the instinctual patterns, and on the other side, we have the manifestation of psyche in active imagination, in dreams, in daydreams, in art, anything that comes straight out of the unconscious. And these two will often mirror each other. So that when you are working at your individuation process, I think it's extremely important that you work on the body as well as on the psyche. If you have muscles that are full of rage, chronic rage, or chronic sense of duty, you will hold your shoulders and you will be good. That's more in men than in women, actually. Or if you are holding chronic fear, you may work at that through a dream image and active imagination and try to get it out. And the muscles may relax a little bit, but they will tighten again. And I keep saying in my opinion, because a lot of Jungians don't believe this, and certainly Freudians don't. but if you don't release the body, the rage is still there. And sooner or later, you have to get that poison out, because it's carrying all the old unconscious mother, father stuff. And we can't put new wine in old bottles. So to clear that and leave the body for the new energy to flow in. Now, Jung said that he had worked as hard as he could on the psyche and he didn't have time at 81 to work further on the body. But he did say that he thought it was not only possible, but probable that psyche and soma are two manifestations of the same thing. So that we have the image of the psychoid archetype, the manifestation through the biology and through the psyche. Now, if you can image another little diagram, we have body on one side and psyche like this, okay? You can see that? Two cones. He said that body and spirit are like two cones that meet and do not meet. So that the points come down, they don't quite meet, but almost, and then they fall back. So can you get the sense then of the body and the spirit filling the body? But this point where they meet and do not meet is the point that we're talking about. Where does chemistry turn into emotion? Where does emotion turn into chemistry? In other words, if you've got something wrong with your thyroid gland, at what point does that influence depression or hypertension, hyperelation? If you are depressed all the time, how is that affecting your chemistry? At what point does that chemistry go into psyche? Do you understand the issue? Now, Jung said that he just had to be left. What's happened in the last 10 years, they have discovered that there is something in the blood called neurotransmitters. And neuropeptides that act like little mirrors. And if these mirrors, I'm using an image here, pick up a dark, painful image, it affects the chemistry of the blood. It affects the immune system. In the experiment that I heard about from some men who were at the clinic, they showed the film The Omen, and then they tested the immune systems of the people who saw it, and their immune systems were disturbed for 1 month. So you see what watching the news every night at 10 is doing for your immune system, especially if you watch a good rape movie afterwards. I mean, we are deluged with dark, heavy images. We go out on the street and we see things. So here again, speaking of the new ethos, I think we have to really take responsibility for the images that we try to digest. Images are just as important as food. The food feeds the biological side, the images feed the psyche. Incidentally, they also showed Sound of Music to this group, and their immune system was also influenced for the better for a month. So that the images are crucial. And of course, Jung said the symbol is the healer. I'd just like to look at that. Now, I'd like to just also refer here to Deepak Chopra. Some of you have perhaps read some of his books. He makes a very interesting statement about healing. And of course, shamans have known this for centuries, and medicine men. And Christ, I'm sure, used this method of healing. But Chopra, you'll have to just imagine, I've got a blackboard up here, okay? Can you see the letter A? Here's B, C, D, E, F. Now, Chopra says, if you are sick, in the healing process, the big thing is to get from A to B. Once you get to B, the healing process will naturally take over. The trick is to get to B. He says you have to drop into the realm of silence. And you drop into the realm of silence, whatever it is you hit there will determine whether you get to B or not. Do you hear what I'm saying? No? Just think it again. Okay, because I'm starting to weave now. You know, we're thinking about all those images we looked at yesterday, good and bad. We're looking at the objectivity. We're looking at this psychoid archetype. Okay, all these things together. In terms of the new ethos, if you can move from A to B, that is the secret. You have to drop into the realm of silence in order to do that. And it depends on what you hit in the realm of silence, whether you get to be or not. Now, as a healer, what would you think that would mean? What would Jung say? Love, God, energy, self, and one other thing we need here, soul. Surrender. Well, you have to have the surrender. Just a second. We're getting all kinds of wonderful stuff. We have to have surrender. I mean, this is all. You have to be able to surrender to this thing in the silence. God, love, energy. But what in the unconscious? Symbols. Yeah, but the symbols are going to come out of the archetype. That awful word again. It's the archetypal world. The archetypal world comes out of the self. I mean, we're all saying the same thing, but I just want you to get that archetypal world snapped into place so that you're not afraid of the word, but I mean, it's bandied around in the culture, so it means nothing. You see, here's the thing. If you drop into the archetypal negative mother, you're not going to get to be. Not alone. No, you don't. No. Somebody might help you turn it around. But if you go into a negative mother, the thought pattern would be, it doesn't matter whether I live or not. Now, it might not be in consciousness, you see, but the body would give in to the negative mother, and that, of course, is death. So, if you dropped into that dimension of silence, and there was a loving mother to take you in her arms, put your head against her chest and let you hear her heartbeat, the energy might turn around towards life. And Jung realized this. I just think it, he didn't have any of the science that we've got now to back this up. But he intuitively saw that at that place where the cones meet and do not meet, the bridge is the symbol. Now, if you think of a dream, it is a picture of a spiritual condition. And there's the tie-up. From the body, from the instinctual side, you get the physical picture in the dream. From the spiritual side, you are being told what the spiritual condition is. And this is the building of the subtle body. So that if you work with, I'm maybe intuiting too much for some of you here, and don't worry if I am. But I've been working on this now for 20 years. And I started working at it because I was very, very sick. And I just did what the dreams told me to do, and I followed the symbols. And what has developed during that 20 years, and I do this with my now sons now as well, and they're having similar experiences, having been at it for 12 years, there is a light, and yoga, think of yoga, there is a light body begins to form. And you can actually visualize areas of the body where it is forming. So that there is a radiance can manifest that subtle body. The poets call it the metaphorical body. Or the energy body. I've heard some people call it the energy body. But it's the body of light that form, and it's got to do with the immune system, it's got to do with these neuropeptides, and it's that essence between the poles that meet and do not meet. And it has to do with the incarnation of spirit in soul. Now, that's the body that lives on images. But it goes further than that, because you take an image, and this is, some of you have heard me use this one before, it's such a straightforward one and you probably know it. Macbeth knows that Lady Macbeth is dead. It's the woman he loved. He himself has destroyed himself, and he knew he was doing it. He hears she's committed suicide, and he says, she should have died hereafter. Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in its petty pace from day to the last syllable of recorded time. And all our yesterdays have lighted fools the way to dusty death. Out, out, brief. Now, what is the image of the candle doing to you? You read the poem, out, out, brief, candle. Why?
Because that's all there is.
What?
That's all there is to life. That's all there is to eternity.
This little brief time. All there is to eternity. Yes, okay, the gentleman says it's depressing. Because you see the candle go out. Maybe you've done a ritual where you said goodbye to something you loved. You put the candle out. Now, what the gentleman said, it hits the emotional body, depression, right? So it hits the emotions. The example I gave you, it's hitting the body, as the physical body. Anything else? There is a mental level. You may not say it, but the candle is life, right? It's the loss of light. The candle going out is the loss of light, right? All right, now, so we have mental, emotional, physical, spiritual, and one other. I'd have to spend half an hour with you to show how that works in that play, but this is where Shakespeare is just absolutely magnificent. You remember at the beginning of the play when Lady Macbeth prays for darkness and prays that the darkness will come and take this milk from her breast and fill her from the tip of her toes to the top of her head chock full of darkness. Right through the play, the darkness is starting to move in, and every image starts to move this way until finally it's out, out, breathe, candle. The soul is dead. And Macbeth prophesied that from his first soliloquy. So it's the imagination as well. Now that's important when you're doing dreams, because the images shift and you can see they're the same image changing. So that and it gives you such a thrill to think, hey, that guy with the red jerkin is the pirate that had the red beads. And you think, oh, there is something going on here. So now, if the symbol is working on all of those levels, you are being brought together as a whole being. And you are resonating right down the center. And that is why the symbol heals. How many times a day do you feel whole? See, we go around in fragmented bits. You know, we're stinky bodies in the gym, and we're teeth in the dentist's office, and we're something else when we're in the classroom. And so that there's a fragmentation. What we're trying to do in analysis is bring you into, and ourselves, into wholeness. And it's your images that can do that. So that you just work with an image until you say, yeah, that's it. And you can feel the goose flesh. You know that feeling? You've hit it. It's right. Or sometimes when you hear one note on the piano, it's right. Or one word in a poem, and it's right. And it just goes zing. In an analytic session, it usually happens in silence. I always think, you know, there's got to be that one moment when it's ringing absolutely true. Because the analysis is going to take that away for the week. That's the touchstone for the week. So that center gets stronger and stronger, you see. So that they begin that they can hold their own center and they don't need the analysis anymore. Because they've got their own strong central axis. And they can work with their own symbols in that way. The symbol is going right through to the archetypal image. It is the archetypal image. You see? So that you're ringing, you are ringing into the archetypal dimension. The kingdom of God is within. And it's body, imagination, emotional body, spirit, mind. See, this is the other thing about this process. It's the loving surrender to what comes to you. And taking time to let it come to you. If you rush right through every day, there aren't going to be any symbols, you say. Your very rushing is a symbol. Some people in their dreams ride around on horses. Some people ride in cars. Big difference. Look at the attitude towards the body in that. Do you see the difference between riding on a horse, driving a car, riding on a bicycle, riding on a donkey? And you've got the two realms, the realm of the spiritual insight and the... Now, in my, where I am with this now, and I can just give this to you from my point of view, I believe that there is a light in the body that I would call moonlight, the Sophia light, the light in matter, and that the stronger the container is, and the more you work with it, the more spirit it can take. And that when that spirit comes in, the container has to be strong enough to take it. Otherwise, you have a psychotic episode. And ordinarily, the psyche is very kind. It will not create a psychotic episode. So if you don't create a strong container, you won't get much spiritual penetration. And it's a slow process building that up. But this, I think, is part of the new ethos. This, for me, is bringing the feminine to consciousness. There's magnificent wisdom in the body. And it's a wisdom that just opens the heart. Because what you see, as you work with the body, you work with your own shadow. You realize what a mess you are. And you just learn to forgive. You realize these great holes in yourself, or even, you know, negative, really negative stuff. And in that forgiveness, you forgive others and you stop judging. And this is where I see, practically speaking, the new ethos is moving. The old judgmental games have to stop, but how can they stop if you still don't see and claim your own shadow? And in our culture, many people, as someone said yesterday, there's a stone wall jams them off from their body. So when you move down into the body, you find these forgotten parts. Some of them very positive, some not so positive. But it's in that forgiveness that the heart cracks open. And that's when you know what love is. And it's an energy that heals. I would just leave that at that point for a moment. You know, Auden said that the new ethos was about your crooked neighbor. loving your crooked neighbor with your own crooked heart. I think that's great. To watch people, simple people, you know, people so often say to me, I don't know about that book of yours, Leaving My Father's House. Those women have such great dreams. I never have dreams like that. Those women are all housewives, wives. They had no thought in this wide world of ever having such dreams. Those dreams are given to the simplest people if they pay attention. But if the gift is not received, it doesn't come. And you see, I think that what we're talking about has been the gift of the saints for ages. But now people like you and me are being called to this understanding and loving, so that it's a global thing. And the leaders and the intuitives that have gone before have a lot to say to us about this realm. Because this is the area where you go from having a soul to being ensouled. And that tree out there, all nature, the blue bonnets, every one of us, we are all part of that soul. And when you have that kind of perception, you don't rape her. And instead of rejecting our body, we become embodied. And instead of trying to control other people, we are empowered in ourselves. Embodied, empowered, ensouled. And at that level, you see, it's a coming together of the divine and the human working together towards that. It's not an ideal. I was going to say ideal. That's a patriarchal word. It's a reality. Now, somebody asked me about Kundalini, and I said I would speak to that. In my experience with Kundalini, it's the energy in the body. The snake that comes up the spine comes right straight up and meets the other energy here. Many of my nonsense, after a body work session where they've really opened their back, they get shooting light coming up their body in various places. And in the night, the arms are doing things like this. And their dreams manifest with light flashing. Sometimes it's strong enough that they perceive as if there were backlighting in nature, for example. You know that glorious light that comes at sunset when everything can seem backlit and it looks golden, as if there's gold coming through it? So that the perception with the eyes is different. Now, I'm using the word perception there, because for me, seeing with the eyes is one thing, perceiving is something else. Perceiving, you are looking with the eyes of the imagination, and you are able to look into. It's like seeing with the third eye. That it can be quite strong in other people. And it can manifest in the dream as a snake energy that's just a light when it comes. To me, it's the building of the container. You see that this is the energy in the body, the positive energy that is making the container transparent in a way. Yes. If you can't access your dreams, Well, I just take life a little slower, for one thing. Jung says what is not brought to consciousness comes to us as fate. I think that's something worth remembering. What is not brought to consciousness comes to us as fate. So if you're not getting your dreams and can't get the unconscious to consciousness in that way, look at your life, because you will be living the dream. So look at a conversation that you have with someone and then work with it as you would work with a dream image. And you may work with you may be an artist, I don't know what your work is, but whatever comes to you as symbol, try to work with that. If you look at paintings of the French Impressionists, they were painting the light in matter. But if you get too close to light, you know, it's a dangerous thing to come into the presence of the living God if you haven't got a goddess to contain it. So that the two sides have to constantly work together. If you look at Rupert Sheldrake's work in biology, he is working on these fields of light. You look at physics, and they're talking about matter wanting to become conscious, and matter releasing into light. And it just seems to me that one of the things in the new ethos has to do with the light in matter, which is the coming together of the divine and the human. Well, we have to stop, ladies and gentlemen, and I just wanted to leave you with T.S. Eliot. It's sort of become a benediction in my world, but I really have to have it for myself too. Because we are faced with these questions, we don't know the answers, and we don't know quite what our stance is. And I think that these few lines from Four Quartets really can help us through those places where we don't know where we are. I said to my soul, be still, and wait without hope, for hope would be hope for the wrong thing. And wait without love, for love would be love of the wrong thing. There is yet faith. But the faith and the hope and the love are all in the waiting. And do not think, for you are not ready for thought. So the darkness shall be the light, and the stillness the dancing. Thank you.